Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings, take care, to care. Nahastan aniva nijone go shavothya, nijone go shavothya. Hey, 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 yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Hey, 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 yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo.
Akwe, greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat Kiddushi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations. Music from the Mi'kmaq Drum Eastern Eagle Singers off their ABBA record CD, Sacred Flight. The name of that song was Mi'kmaq Pride. Ashkwe, greetings and hello everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yad Kiddushi Native Center. We begin our program with our drum song as an honor to today's guest, Native American scholar Evan Pritchard. Evan is a Mi'kmaq brother and friend of mine. He and I share many of the same concerns for the protection of Mother Earth and well-being of our life. We have this connection to each other as we are both Wabanaki, brothers of the Wabanaki Native Confederacy, commonly known as Northeastern Woodland Indians. Our homeland, the Eastern Dawnland of Turtle Island, is where the sun first rises in North America. As Brother Earth warriors, Evan and I often speak out about many important issues facing our planet. One of the most serious is what in English is termed global climate change. This is the focus of today's telephone interview. Evan and I have been taught by traditional elders the indigenous principle of caring for future generations. The issue of global climate change is therefore central to our indigenous cultural lifeways and cultural survival, not to mention ecological impacts to all other life, our relatives, Kanan Wantokwasin, all of our relations. Indigenous peoples throughout the world have always lived with reverence and respect with our biosphere. Native cultures have very specific ceremonies and customs to ensure not only our own tribal well-being, but equally important, the well-being of our natural world relatives. In English, it is termed environmental protection. My own clan, the Wolf Clan, are known as those who watch over the health of our forests, animal, aquatic, and plant relations. Our ancient Wolf Clan responsibility to protect nature is, in fact, ecological monitoring and impact assessment. This is how and why many of the early warnings about climate change have been voiced by indigenous peoples throughout the world. In many cases, indigenous peoples are the first people most threatened by climate change. Scientists finally now substantiate what indigenous peoples have been trying to point out for many years, that major weather changes have been seen from the high Arctic to Pacific Islands. Wolf Mountain Radio has for many years been reporting on numerous times Native peoples have voiced their concerns and knowledge about global climate change. In 1998, I had the privilege to attend the Circles of Wisdom's Native Peoples, Native Homelands Climate Change Workshop and Summit, which produced the Albuquerque Declaration, which Wolf Mountain Radio listeners have heard in a previous Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices program. Since then, Wolf Mountain Radio has reported on other important Indigenous Peoples forums on climate change. These include the Lyon, France Declaration, the Hague, Netherlands Declaration, the Bonn, Germany Declaration, the Indigenous Peoples Statement in Marrakesh, Morocco, the International Indigenous Peoples Forum Statement in New Delhi, India, the Milan, Italy Declaration, not to mention other venues such as the Kyoto Summit. There is little scientific doubt that global climate change is occurring at alarming rates, and that the cause of climate change is a direct result of negative human impacts on the atmosphere. Yad Kiddushi Native Center understands that global climate change is not just an ecological issue. Global climate change is also a global social and economic justice issue. The greedy exploitation of Mother Earth's energy resources, which is polluting our atmosphere, is also responsible for much of the world's socioeconomic and environmental injustices. Fighting against global climate change also means fighting against globalization. Fighting global climate change is fighting to defend and protect Mother Earth and future generations of our life. This is an important meaning of today's conversation with Evan Pritchard. Evan Pritchard is a well-respected author and educator. He is the founder and director of the Center for Algonquin Culture, CAC. Professor Pritchard teaches Native American history, ethics, and philosophy at Marist College in New York. Evan is a prolific writer, and I highly recommend his publications, which include the book No Word for Time, The Way of the Algonquin People, the book Native New Yorkers, The Legacy of the Algonquin People, and the book Native American Stories of the Sacred. We here at Yad Kiddushin Native Center are honored to know Evan as a friend who has shared his insights and knowledge with us on previous Wolf Mountain Radio programs. Importantly, our warrior brother Evan has assisted a number of Algonquin elders, such as Grandfather William Commander. I am deeply appreciative of Evan's assistance to our Native Wisdom Keepers. At the end of our program, we will announce Center for Algonquin Culture's website address for further information on the important work of scholar-activist Evan Pritchard. Welcome back to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, Evan. As a way of beginning our conversation, perhaps it would be good for you to mention your essays on the subject of global climate change, available on your blog site, evansearthwalk.blogspot.com. The April 5, 2006 article entitled Media Watch, the Gaia Conspiracy, and the April 18, 2006 article entitled Media Watch, the Gaia Conspiracy Continued, should be read by all who are concerned about global climate change.
Frank Way Oness, good to talk to you. The fairly new website that's dedicated to global warming and climate change is called evansearthwatch.blogspot.com, and I've been working on this for a while. You know, I've become a big believer in blogs. You know, while we have computers and electricity to run them, you know, I think blogs are a good way to communicate. And there's two articles posted on there, each one about 15 pages long, about what I call the Gaia Conspiracy. And this is evidence, if you call it, you know, articles or whatnot, leading one to think that perhaps there is somebody who doesn't want us to know all about global warming and the Gaia theory. And then what the third large article, also over 15 pages, is called A Proposal for Addressing Global Warming. The way I see these blogs, the reason I'm not yet publishing a tome in, you know, paper, because, of course, when paper is burned, it creates CO2, and blogs do not. But also, blogs are interactive and encourage people to look at what I've written and write in and respond, and so we can add to these to the information on the blogs, especially the proposal, because, you know, when I've been talking about this now, you know, for a couple months, you know, specifically the new rate of global warming, very unsettling for just about anybody. As long as you're a human being, it's very disturbing news. People want to know what they can do. And so I thought one of the things they can do, you know, was plant trees, for one thing, because there is a certain number of trees that create an oxygen for a person. Also, making a plan and being involved in the solution is a very positive thing to do, and I find myself cheered up by finding that there really are solutions, but they're not just lying there to be had. And of course, everything I do is from a Native American perspective. However, I feel that we've had a lot of time to reverse our ill-conceived ways, as I'm sure you agree. People, you know, have not all gone back to the earth at this point because of, you know, certain triggering mechanisms in the biosphere. We really don't have much time. The technological problems are still there. Unfortunately, I think we need some amount of technological counter-response to solve some of those problems, such as, for example, the levels of CO2, you know, just outlandish. They're not going to go away just by us stopping, even if we stop producing them. And I talked to this very wonderful author, Nancy Jack Todd. She's considered the optimistic environmentalist, and she's an architect. I asked her, are we close to being able to build buildings that can erase current existing CO2 in a natural way that wouldn't destroy, you know, the environmental system? She said she's absolutely sure it can be done. Nobody's done it yet. You know, basically the tools are there. We just have to put them together. You know, there's a lot of optimistic signs among those who are working on this.
Yes, Evan, and I appreciate you mentioning that, especially the role of architects and engineers. And I am aware that a lot of the
colleges of architecture and engineering, the new generation of young grad students are really studying and coming up with some very important design changes of maximizing energy solar efficiency and to reduce waste heat and a lot of that.
Yes, and I've seen a lot of those designs, and they're very creative.
And I'm by no means minimizing the importance of all that, and I'm also by no means minimizing the importance of individual action to try to recycle, reduce, reuse, compost our own energy and natural resource consumption. And, of course, tomorrow being Earth Day, that's very much on our mind. However, I personally don't see much of a change until the global multinational corporations really take their role and influence very seriously. And as long as there are clowns in the White House like Bush, Cheney, and Rumsfeld folks that are trying to run the world into the ground, I don't really see that much hope. I want you to comment in your essay on global climate change you wrote about in the year 2000 when the Clinton White House produced their White House initiative on global climate change, which was a very important report, and I appreciate the work that Al Gore did. At the same time, as you wrote, and which I've been aware of as well, the Republican folks really pushed their agenda through the Luntz Memo, which was a consulting company to try to cast out and minimize global climate change, and was very instrumental in really preventing the U.S. from participating in any meaningful way with the Kyoto Protocol in Kyoto, Japan. Would you talk about what I consider to be the kind of Republican right-wing, extreme, ultra-conservative political movement or political force on the planet as typified by Bush-Cheney regime and how they're really preventing any meaningful global climate change discussion or scientific research?
Well, I have the Luntz Memo in front of me. Let me read it to you and then translate because it's in legalese, but this is the actual wording. The scientific debate remains open on global warming. So the heading is global warming, and it says, quote, the scientific debate remains open. Voters believe that there is no consensus about global warming within the scientific community. Should the public come to believe that the scientific issues are settled, their views about global warming will change accordingly. Therefore, you need to continue to make the lack of scientific certainty a primary issue in the debate and defer to scientists and other experts in the field. End quote. And that was 2000 during the election. So to translate, basically, they're saying create an aura of uncertainty about anything related to global warming, and people will find that the inconvenience of, say, changing to a hybrid car or whatever, which isn't very much inconvenience at all, they will see this inconvenience as not outweighing this, this uncertainty. Well, you know, it's not worth the trouble. And what happened is, just at 2000, looking at Clinton and Gore and what they were publishing in 2000, they were basically summed up accurately the situation. But then with the Luntz Memo was used to the extreme. Anybody who mentioned global warming was ridiculed. And this actually still goes on in most of our universities, by the way.
Yes, in fact, many scientists actually were threatened with losing their job if they didn't toe the political line.
Well, and James Hansen wrote an article in the Washington Post, or he was quoted in the Washington Post a week ago, saying that the amount of censorship that he experienced was reminiscent of Soviet Russia and the Nazi Germany, and he said this on the front page of the Washington Post, which is pretty interesting coverage. The Washington Post has been recently, I've been in Washington recently, and reading the Post, and it is giving a lot of space to people who are absolutely outspoken about Bush, and I find it amusing, you know, because where were they, you know, a year ago? In terms of going back to 2000, back to reading what Clinton and Gore were writing and releasing, that first in the State of the Union address of 2000 was really phenomenal. Clinton nailed it on the head. And also in this Earth Day address of April of 2000, you know, they showed they really understood the gravity of the problem. And that's when the Luntz Memo was written. And, of course, there was this extreme effort involving illegal activities of the entire Supreme Court to make sure Gore didn't become president. Now, Who would want that? Well, the people who stand to lose money by going to zero carbon emissions, and that is, you know, ExxonMobil, who profited $396 billion this past quarter. You can kind of put those two pieces together all by yourself. But what's interesting is the Luntz memo, as time went on, people continued to use this, but the data became more and more certain. And around 2004, the data began to change because global warming accelerated, and the looping memo, the looping mechanisms, and the trigger mechanisms became clear to us. You know, in 2005, you just started to see a few articles escape. And then, of course, Lovelock's book started to get press in January in England, officially released on February 2nd in England. And in this book, he reveals this trigger, which is having to do with algae. And the thing is, in all the computer models, when the CO2 and other greenhouse gases reaches 500 parts per million around the globe, and the temperature reaches 16 Celsius, which is 62 degrees average Earth temperature, then the algae crashes worldwide, and algae runs the system. Algae gets us the oxygen, sucks down the CO2, cools the atmosphere in the oceans. And if all the algae dies, the temperature jumps up 18 degrees Fahrenheit around the world, which would create probably 1,000-mile-an-hour winds, in my opinion, and I think you probably would confer with that, right? But anyway, just saying, it would create a lot of hurricanes because a degree, 1 degree change, a rise in 1 degree of the ocean's surface creates 50% more virulent hurricanes, according to our past experience of the past few years. And imagine what 16 degrees would be. This is one of the things he writes about in this book, Revenge of Gaia. It was supposed to be released on March 2nd in the U.S. It was never released and never listed. The rumor is that Basic Books is going to publish this book sometime in the fall. By that time, anything that's in this book other than this news will probably be spread all over the place. But it diffuses the importance of Lovelock's book, which I'm not saying is perfect, and I know you would find a lot of issues with it because he emphasizes nuclear power as a solution. You know, there's a lot of valuable information in the book. So that came out on February 2nd. And then the Time magazine article came out with some of the same information, not including some of the really shocking things, but some of the things we really need to know about the Arctic melting came out April 3rd.
Yes, that's right. As you noted in your essay and others have, there's been a tremendous amount of sea ice loss, and of course even some of the permafrost is starting to melt. And I have had the opportunity to converse with a number of Inuit and Inupiaq people in the last few weeks over the internet up in Barrow, and they are reporting on, you know, a lot of very serious changes already in the animal and plants that they live on. Of course, many wildlife biologists like myself have already talked about polar bears and the threat to their survival and other marine mammals. So there's no question that global climate change is occurring. Let me ask you a little bit about, again, getting back to the role of multinational corporations. On the one hand, we have basically the banks, the financial institutions, and even the insurance industry beginning to pay some serious attention to this issue, while on the other hand, some of the other economic power brokers of Western society, such as the energy companies, are kind of like the captains on the Titanic going full stream ahead. Mm-hmm. Do you see the corporate industrial community becoming of consensus with this, or are they going to still, in a sense, spar with each other?
You know, I thought that they would have to come around, but just 2 days ago, Harper in Canada,
yes,
the current prime minister in Canada, Harper has come out to try to erase all of the environmental bills that the Liberals put in last year and to completely cut all the funding to existing programs to fight global warming. What they say, the rumor is up in Canada, you know, I spent a lot of time there, is that he's left the bureaucrats in place with nothing to do. It's a complete waste of money allocated for fighting global warming. This makes no sense because most Canadians are very savvy on environment, and Canada spends a lot of money on conservation of the conventional kind. The only way I can understand this makes any sense is if he personally got a large sum of money from Bush to do this for saying they're doing research. But in fact, what they do is they have lawyers who rewrite these research papers, and anything that sounds certain, they change the wording to say it's uncertain.
Yes.
I am endlessly surprised at the stubbornness of these people, but they are making huge sums of money.
Evan, before we continue our discussion, I wanted to just briefly comment that while the government of Canada perhaps is somewhat ecologically and socially more aware of things within their own country, they, as a Western power, are still part of the globalization force all over the world. And in fact, the government of Canada and their energy companies are, as you know as well as I, very much involved with destroying much of the Amazon for energy development, and they're doing a lot of the dirty work that the United States, in a sense, encourages them to do. I just wanted to make the comment that while it is true that many Canadians seem to be a little bit more ecologically aware, and if you look at Canadian television and listen to Canadian radio, they do have a little bit more of a liberal worldview of things. I will tell you that their corporations and the government itself, however, policy in terms of exploiting energy and natural resources around the world is just as colonial as so-called United States. And I wanted to make that point as a native person.
No, that's true.
Evergreen, ever blue.
It's up to you. Amazon is calling.
Help this planet Earth.
With voices from the jungle.
Help this planet Earth.
Hear the tree that's falling.
Help this planet Earth.
Rainforests are crying.
Help this planet Earth.
To stay evergreen. It was in the beginning. We've got to see it through. Oh, evergreen, evergreen. At this point in time, it's up to me, it's up to you. Ocean's wave is rumbling.
Help this planet Earth.
With voices from the sea wave.
Help this planet Earth.
Water's for the drinking.
Help this planet Earth.
Beluga whales are singing.
Help this planet Earth
to stay evergreen, ever blue. As it was in the beginning, we got to see it through. Oh, evergreen, ever blue. At this point in time, it's up to me. It's up to you. Right now is when we're needed. We can all do something. The young, the old together. 'Cause the more we get together, the more we help this planet Earth. So come all United Nations.
Help this planet Earth.
Children of one mother.
Help this planet Earth.
With love for one another.
Yeah. Help this planet Earth.
For our sons and daughters' future.
Help this planet Earth
to stay evergreen, ever blue. As it was in the beginning, we've got to see it through. It's up to you.
Help this planet Earth.
It's evergreen and evergreen.
Help this planet Earth.
It's up to me. It's up to you.
Help this planet Earth.
This evergreen and evergreen.
Help this planet Earth.
Music from singer-songwriter environmentalist Rafi. The name of that special song is Evergreen, Everblue, which I had the privilege to hear him sing at the 26th North American Association on Environmental Education Conference in the Squamish and Tsleil-Waututh First Nations homeland in what's now called Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. My guest today in Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices is Native American scholar Evan Pritchard. Evan and I are Wabanaki Eastern Woodland Indians. We both share many similar world views as well as similar cultural concerns about the well-being of Mother Earth. We are talking today about global climate change. In today's program introduction, I mentioned Evan's excellent essays on global climate change posted on his blog site, evansearthwalk.blogspot.com. I most appreciated your writing about possible actions we humans can take to combat global climate change. Evan, would you please talk a little more about important solutions to global climate change?
Well, sure. One thing that I call it a three-step program, but it's actually three steps, each of which has three steps. But basically, what I call EAT, your greens, you know, EAT is green energy, green architecture, and green transportation. And of course, there are other aspects to any holistic approach. These are things that, you know, I want to focus on first with people. Green energy, every single type of alternative energy needs to be discussed in terms of its pros and cons, but it also needs to be implemented. My feeling is that all of them are better than these coal plants. There are 600 of these coal-burning plants, energy plants, that are creating around 35% of the U.S. carbon emissions. And these need to be taken offline right away, but we need something else to, you know, put in their place. Various authors I've read have said that, you know, wind power and solar, since they don't actually, the source doesn't generate the power all the time, you know, are somewhat limited in terms of how much of our current energy stream they can fill. It's probably 20% each, and some people would say less than that. But we should certainly find ways to make them more efficient. I have a relative who is designing new turbines for wind turbines to make them more efficient. In terms of solar panels currently only last 10 years. We should work on improving them, and of course we have tried. We're continuing to try, I'm sure, to make them last longer. If we could get whole buildings in New York City, for example, with large buildings and the entire surface dedicated to solar power, that would be a lot of solar power. But they'd have to have a southern exposure. But there's also different types of, like I say, energy, and there's nuclear, which, of course, is controversial, but I want to mention Spitzer, who's running for governor of New York, and I'm in New York now. You know, he has the best record of an elected official on the environment. He is being very cautious about nuclear power, and he hopes to actually close Indian Point. So that's a very touchy subject with nuclear power, but of course, Lovelock is totally for that. But that's just, the energy aspect is just one. And the second one is architecture. There is so much that we can do with architecture because architecture is the largest things that we build on the planet. And New York City is a very large place with lots of enormous artificial surfaces, probably the most man-made surfaces on the planet. If all of that could be harnessed for solar and wind energy gathering, then architecture could become our best ally. I've been looking at plans from Makran Butt and Nancy and Jack Todd for their architecture for buildings built and unbuilt, and it's absolutely phenomenal what architecture can do. It can do almost anything you want. You can have a building that people live in that actually cleans the environment around it. You can have buildings that have plumbing and heating which do not produce any CEs and do not need sewage. They turn sewage into drinking water, and the people inside drink it, and this is really happening. There are buildings in Holland, which when, you know, Holland is going under the oceans because the oceans are rising, they're building buildings that float, and they're self-contained. The people continue to live in these apartment buildings, and they actually have them up and running where they float during floods. They're things most people have never thought of. So architecture is one of the most efficient ways, and it also is a way that doesn't deplete our economy. It's a new economy kind of issue, and I think it's very exciting. Makran Butt, who lives in Brooklyn, has designed buildings that terrible forestation on them, and even have like spiral walkways where you can walk on the earth, of course up in the air, but also designs buildings that put less shadow on the surrounding buildings so they can use greenhouse effects in, you know, window boxes, which are very good at creating more natural heat. And there's just endless possibilities. But the third one is transportation. You know, they have this car, for example, the Tango, an Italian car that goes very fast. I think it gets 80 miles a gallon. It's an electric car. Of course, it's expensive. We have the possibility, we have the technology to do that. There's ethanol, which has to be discussed in terms of the effectiveness, various kinds of methane.
That's a good point in time for me to jump in. First, let me mention that I'm obviously a supporter of what in English is called alternative energy sources,
yeah.
And I'm also one that would say that if you look at the work of Amory and Hunter Lovins and Barry Commoner and others in the 1980s with soft energy paths, I am convinced that people of the industrialized countries like North America and Europe and Japan, Australia, for example, could recover a lot of wasted energy currently that our societies waste just by more energy-efficient design architecture, more energy-efficient design transportation systems, as you say. And that is, to me, the most important and first priority to do is to go after energy through conservation. However, when people talk about alternative energy and they bring up the issue of biofuels, I'm very, very concerned about this. As you know, Evan, I am a biologist, ecologist, and the way in which that whole debate is being discussed now is very, very misleading, because actually it takes more fossil fuel energy to produce 1 gallon of ethanol, because under the ways in which scientists are talking about using biofuels, we're talking about the use of fertilizers, herbicides, and insecticides, at least if we're going to be talking about using corn or soybean, for example, which is what multinational companies like Archer Daniels Midland or other companies with their genetically modified organism, GMO, plans are pushing for. So the way in which biofuels are being described and discussed is really a very tricky subject. I'm very cautious about advocating that. I see that as a way, again, for large multinational agribusiness industries to exploit public sphere, get a lot of corporate as well as government subsidies and R&D under the disguise of energy to really expand their agri-industry interests, such as, again, monocultures and large-scale corporate plantations of genetically modified organisms. I won't even honor with the word plants, because many of these things are not even natural cultigens anymore. So we need to be very careful when we talk in terms of lay concepts to the public, especially in the area of biofuel. I see that as a very scary, misleading form.
Yes, and what this leads to is if you put all these things together, they still don't make 100% change in the picture, and so conservation has to be a major part of it. People have to rethink how they do everything, and this is the part that politicians are going to have trouble selling, but it's the most important part, as you know, and to do this, we have to have a sense of devotion to the earth and a sense of purpose for saving ourselves from this scenario where we hit 500 parts per million and suddenly there's 1,000-mile-an-hour winds blowing everything off the planet. Nobody wants that.
Fly to when every season's rolled into one. Hey kangaroo, where do you run to? Why listen for the sound of the man with a gun, the hunter's gun. Mother Nature keeps on crying tears of rain from the sky. really makes you wonder about tomorrow. Is Mother Earth getting ready to die? Is Mother Earth going to die? Long, long ago, in a dream time, our Mother Earth, she was beautiful and new. Then changes came to the landscape. Now there's cities, farms, and factories on you. There's a mess on you. Mother Nature keeps on crying. Tears of rain from the sky. It makes you wonder about tomorrow. Is Mother Earth getting ready to die? Is Mother Earth going to die? You find a better way to live, to a better day. Mother Nature keeps on crying, tears of rain from the sky. It makes you wonder about tomorrow. Is Mother Earth getting ready to die? Mother Nature keeps on crying, tears of rain from the sky, yeah. It makes you wonder about tomorrow. Is Mother Earth getting ready to die? Is Mother Earth going to die? Is Mother Earth getting ready to die? Is Mother Earth going to die?
You are listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitichi Native Center. Yat-Kitichi Native Center defends Mother Earth and the cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Yat-Kitichi Native Center is an intertribal, culture and arts, environmental protection, social justice, and news media organization. Yat-Kitichi Native Center portrays Native peoples and their world views in a more accurate and in-depth depiction of both our ancestral and contemporary cultures. Yat-Kitichi Native Center serves to educate by providing a deeper understanding of our diverse cultures, arts, values, histories, and contemporary situations. Yat-Kitichi tries to honor traditional ways by instilling an appreciation and respect for Mother Earth and tribal peoples throughout the world. Yat-Kitichi Native Center educates the public on important issues facing Indigenous communities. We work in support of intertribal, cultural, environmental, and social justice issues by networking with other organizations and events which share our concerns. Yat-Kitichi Native Center serves as a focal point for Native news and information. We maintain a documentary library for networking with the Native and international press. Yat-Kitichi Native Center's Speakers Bureau provides spokespersons for school programs, conference speakers, and community presentations. Yat-Kitichi Native Center is experienced in planning, promoting Native forums, symposiums, powwows, and cultural events. Yat Kedetchi's Mishkwinataki Environment Program protects Mother Earth through conservation and restoration projects. Yat Kedetchi's Environmental Education Program focuses on curriculum development, teacher training, and nature field trips. We are members of the professional organization, the North American Association of Environmental Education. Yat Kedetchi's Kinonwatakwisin Native Arts creates quality handcrafted traditional and contemporary fine arts. Please request our catalog of custom flutes, pottery, beaded necklaces, bracelets, earrings, leather pouches, hat bands, and chokers with bone. Yat Kedetchi Native Center's Wolf Mountain Radio Program, Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, honors Native American and Indigenous peoples throughout the world by being a voice for our ancestors, contemporary, and future generations. Please write us for our catalog of audio tapes available for purchase. Native peoples throughout the world are concerned for the well-being of Sacred Mother Earth, tribal sovereignty, and respect for cultural lifeways. If you appreciate hearing Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, we ask you, our listeners, to help financially support our program to stay on the air. Wolf Mountain Radio is an all-volunteer production. Any financial contribution to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices will be greatly appreciated. We thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Please feel free to contact us about our consulting services, or if you or your organization is interested in hosting a speaker or educational forum. To contact Yat Kedetchi Native Center, write to Yat Kedetchi Native Center, 1731 16th Avenue Northeast, Naples, Florida, 34120, USA. Yat Kedetchi Native Center sincerely thanks you. Aho, Kinawatakwisin, to all of our relations.
Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. I want to again thank my Mi'kmaq brother, Evan Pritchard, for sharing his thoughts with us today on Wolf Mountain Radio. Listeners who wish to learn more about Evan's Center for Algonquin Culture can either type in Center for Algonquin Culture on a Google search or the website www.wilkesweb.us/Algonquin. That's www.wilkesweb.us/Algonquin. You can also write Evan at Center for Algonquin Culture, P.O. Box 1028, Woodstock, New York, zip code 12498, USA. Please remember you can order Evan's publications in your nearest bookstore or through CAC's Renaissance Communications Office by telephoning area code 212-714-7151. Thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. As always, we welcome comments and suggestions about our programs. Listeners can email Yat Kedetchi Native Center's Wolf Mountain Radio at yatkedetchi@earthlink.net. Once again, listeners can email us at yatkitischee@earthlink.net. Further information about Yat Kedetchi Native Center is always available on our website, www.yatkedetchi.org. Once again, Yat Kedetchi Native Center's website is www.yatkitischee.org. We shall conclude today's program with a flute song from Joseph Firecrow off his Mekoshe Music CD, Red Beads. The name of the song is Song for Grandfathers. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Aho, Kinon Wontakwisin, to all of our relations. Thank you.